Lonnie, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Howard. It's a pleasure, a privilege.
Your book, Intangible, is unique in a lot of ways. I mean, I read a lot of baseball books, as you probably know. I'm a big fan. But this is unique in the subject matter. You talk about the numbers in baseball, you know, and now, you know, we're in the age of sabermetrics and algorithms that tell you everything about
everything.
Everything that could possibly happen on a baseball field to a pitcher, to a fielder, to a hitter. But there's more to the game than that. And that's what the point that you're trying to make.
Yeah. And sabermetrics have really illuminated the sport to an astonishing degree, I think, and really heightened the understanding of the game in a lot of ways. I have no quarrel with the sabermetricians who present that material and have studied it and come up with ingenious ways to quantify nearly everything. Where I think we need to maybe take a turn is in what we do with that information. And in reading message boards and the like, I hear a lot of fans adhering to that sabermetric approach nearly 100%, to the exclusion of other things that still matter. And what I want to do with this book, I mean, those of us who have played or followed the game are always hearing about guys who play the game the right way and guys who are good teammates. And it's sort of murky. It's kind of a mystery as to what effect that really has. And I just wanted to study it over a period of years and take a close look at those things, the unseen and unquantifiable aspects of the game, and see if I could determine that it was effective. There was an efficacy to being a good teammate.
And really, I mean, you make a good case that there is. Chemistry on a baseball team makes a big difference. Having veteran players around to help bring along the younger players, teach them how to be major league ball players and how a major league ball player conducts himself. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's very important.
As a journalist, you being a former journalist, you'd appreciate our sort of marriage to objectivity. I don't claim to have gone into this subject objectively. I had a rooting interest in demonstrating, seeing if I could not prove but illustrate that those qualities were meaningful, that they played a role in winning, in success. And so I had a rooting interest in seeing that those features were brought to bear and the abstractions that we trust, being a good teammate, doing the little things, hitting behind the runner, you know, either on the field or in the clubhouse, made a difference. And thankfully, I trusted ahead of time. It was sort of an article of faith that I would find that they mattered, and was thankful that ultimately I did. And who knows how much? I don't know if sabermetrics takes you, you know, 90% of the way, 97% of the way. But there's some room left there. There's a difference between the sabermetric expectation and the reality on the field and in the standings. Sabermetrics would attribute that to luck. I would think that a little bit of that territory that has been carved out for luck can be annexed by intangibles.
You use many, many examples from many different teams in baseball, many different players over the years. A lot of examples from Cincinnati Reds, obviously, because you were there. You saw it.
Yeah, I followed the Reds from the 2008 season through 2012 on a daily basis to observe specifically for these small things, unseen things, and gather whatever anecdotal evidence I could. During that period, the Phillies and Tampa Bay Rays met in the 2008 World Series, both emphasizing character, culture change on their roster. So they gave me a good springboard. The Cardinals in 2011, the miraculous comeback made and the character they showed, led by Albert Pujols, were a great example. The Giants, their postseason success, the way they always manage without the most star-studded roster to come through in the end and win ways that nobody can explain. So those were all good examples. But the Reds were my centerpiece. They were the team I followed every day. And they did in winning divisions in 2010, 2012, after Walt Jocketty had instituted a culture change. They did help make the point, but it wasn't imperative, you know, that they win a World Series and succeed wildly. I just wanted to observe the vagaries of it, you know, the extent to which they did succeed and sometimes fail.
That culture change in the Cincinnati Reds I think you could probably trace back to when they traded away Adam Dunn and Ken Griffey Jr.
Sure. And Jocketty was well aware of that.
Why is that? What was going on in that clubhouse? These were two ball players who were obviously very accomplished and well-liked by their teammates, but there was something missing.
It was an unusual dynamic, particularly with two guys of that nature. Both, as you say, were stars, and particularly Griffey. Jay Bruce grew up with a poster of Ken Griffey Jr. over his bed. And when the Reds otherwise were mostly a young team, when two stars dominate a clubhouse like Griffey and Dunn did, they become, by osmosis, the leaders. Others take their cues from them. Well, Griffey and Dunn were not leader types. It's not a criticism of them. It's not a chastisement. They're both likable guys.
They're just
funny. Adam Dunn is maybe the funniest guy in the clubhouse that I've ever heard. But they had a kind of a slow, laid-back way of going about things. And it was not an approach that rubbed off effectively and productively on younger players. And of course, it was sort of the symbol of it was the recliner gate incident, because Griffey and Dunn both had recliners in the clubhouse.
Massaging recliners.
And there was a sense of it being a country club atmosphere, and the Reds had a string of losing seasons, and that wasn't getting it done. And they did need a culture change, and it's not a strike against those guys, an indictment of them, but Jocketty recognized that, and I believe he was right. They needed young players who were the gym rat types and who would not be influenced by a player who maybe, Griffey couldn't run full speed to first base because, his legs had been torn up. Well, how much does a young player understand that? What he sees is the superstar doesn't run hard to first base. Do I have to? I'm not saying that they suffered from the imitation of the superstars, but there was a lack of energy and urgency in the clubhouse and on the roster that Jocketty recognized and took steps to address.
What was it that brought it back?
They had done a good job of scouting and signing young players who came with that attitude. Todd Frazier is a ball player all the way. And he's a guy who helps other teammates. He's a good influence wherever he goes. Joey Votto works very, very hard at his craft, as you know. And then Jocketty was wise enough to bring in Scott Rolen as a veteran. When the Reds, at the trading deadline, when the Reds were out of the race, a young team, typically that team would be retooling, bringing in younger players. Jocketty made the very unconventional move of bringing in a veteran in his last couple years with back injuries and shoulder injuries. But he knew that Rolen would set an example for the younger players.
But there were a lot of people, a lot of fans thought he was crazy.
He was taken to task. And the media did too.
Encarnacion and two very good young pitchers.
Right. And they did pay a price for Rolen. I think it proved itself in the end, not only the production he gave the Reds on the field, he was able to not only play third base at a Hall of Fame level, but man the cleanup spot for a while. His skills faded with his injuries, as nobody was surprised to see. And I think he's missed. The organization really, judging by the standings, has not been the same since he left. Who knows how responsible he is for that? But the younger players called him Chief Big Fist. And Rolen was not a guy who would actively seek out younger players and impose his wisdom on them.
Yeah.
But if they violated the game, he would give them a look or a word. If they came to him, he was ready with an answer. And he set a wonderful example just by taking ground balls in the infield. As accomplished as he was, he would set his feet for every ground ball he fielded, every throw he made to first base. He would never do it haphazardly. And a young player has to see that and be edified.
He would sit there in the dugout and talk to a kid like Jay Bruce.
Like Jay Bruce, sure.
And it helped.
One specific
got to get third.
Yeah. The base running is an area that he addressed. He was an aggressive base runner.
Right.
And he used Brucey for his example. Bruce would be on first and would say, "We need you at third, Brucey." And that became a mantra on the team. No matter who was at first base, if it was Orlando Cabrera, Joey Votto, it was "Need you on third, Brucey," because the Reds picked up that message. It also brings up an interesting point that none of this is simple and clear cut, because in trying to take extra bases, for instance, the Reds were often thrown out. They did not run the bases that effectively. So there remains a question, is leadership or are the social qualities that an intangible superstar can impart are they always for the better? It's a mixed bag. It's a very, very complicated subject.
You mentioned the 2011 Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
They became a wild card team. They managed to get all the way through the playoffs, get into the World Series, win the World Series in seven games against the Texas Rangers. It's an amazing story.
And they faced the last strike before being eliminated a couple times. And they faced the last game, even to get into the playoffs, many times in the last couple of weeks.
And you
got to
give them a whole lot of credit for the grit and the determination and the will to win.
And as much as Reds fans would prefer not to admit it, the Cardinals have established a culture there. When in the 2011 season, I really thought that Albert Pujols was the driving force behind the Cardinals rally. He had broken his wrist, if you recall, during the season and returned to the lineup in, I think it was less around 2 weeks or so, remarkably, and took off at that point. Of course, Tony La Russa was a wonderful leader. Then they don't re-sign Pujols. La Russa leaves, and I know I thought many people did, well, the Cardinal mini-dynasty is over, but it wasn't. They continue on, and I think it's a testament to the fact that they have established a culture in their organization from top to bottom.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, people are disappointed in the current version of the Reds, you know, where they are in the standings. I mean, you see hope in the future for this club in terms of the people they have, the personnel they have.
I do, and I think they have approached it properly. I believe that the notion of chemistry is very, very complicated, and people think it's just everybody liking each other, and that has very, very little to do with it. And I think it's misunderstood, but chemistry I perceive as players affecting each other in a positive way. I think they have attracted players that do that, but where I think they have failed a little bit is in the specific physical chemistry of the players. They have always lacked a couple key pieces in their lineup, whether it's a cleanup hitter or a leadoff hitter. They're always weak at a couple, one or two positions that is blatant, very glaring to many people, but has gone unaddressed. And so I think they have not, while they've addressed sort of the moral and social chemistry of the ball club, I think they've neglected the on-field chemistry. I think that's held them back. Roland's retirement, I think, was an issue. The injuries have been also, particularly Joey Votto's and some of the pitching injuries. The couple of the national reviews have questioned why I spent so much time on the Reds, and here they are in 2015, you know, out of the race early. Well, the book went through 2012 for one thing, but also it was not a prerequisite that the team to study and follow would be one that succeeded at every level. It's important to look at what works and what doesn't work. I would like to see the Reds fare better in the standings, but both their successes and failures were informative.
Yeah, and that's the point of the book, that for a club to succeed, it has to have some of these character.
It has to address that. You know, when you look at the success the Giants and Cardinals have had and the Yankee teams, in spite of their skyrocket payroll, when they were led by Derek Jeter and Jorge Posada and Andy Pettitte, it was a team that just oozed character and created a culture and tradition that they prospered by.
Well, thank you very much for coming in tonight, Lonnie. Really interesting.
Well, I appreciate it. I do think Reds fans will review some of those seasons in a way that hopefully in a little bit of a new light, but in a way that takes them back to some
pretty
cool
good
moments.
Yeah. Well, I've been talking this evening with longtime baseball writer Lonnie Wheeler, author of the new book, Intangible, The Subtle Things That Win Baseball Games. And you'll find a link at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. I'm Howard Wilkinson.